KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Katie O'Brien's, located at 2809 Northeast Sandy, a neighborhood sports bar serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Lunch was provided by Dots Cafe, located at 2521 Southeast Clinton Street, serving food and drinks to the Southeast Clinton neighborhood since 1991, including vegan and gluten-free options as well as brunch. Dinner was provided by Dove Vivi, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason, serving cornmeal crust pizza for dine-in and takeout.
Join us for the KBOO Community Radio Monthly Film Night at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, we'll be showing the documentary film Symphony of the Soil on Thursday, May 14th at 7 p.m.
We don't grow plants, we grow soil, and soil grows plants.
The soil returns to what it was like when it was first broken out.
So alive and so vital.
Again, that's Symphony of the Soil at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO members, what's your vision for your community radio station? How do you see the mission of KBOO? The KBOO Foundation has a programming charter and strategic plan, and now it's time for a mission and vision statement to help direct our policy and inspire the community. From now through May 15th, we're inviting member input on our website. Visit kboo.fm/survey2015 to take our survey. You can also read up on our programming charter and other guidelines and find frequently asked questions at the same page, kboo.fm/survey2015, or you can pick up a copy of the survey at the station. And on Saturday, May 30th, we'll be hosting a mission and vision retreat for members. If you'd like to attend, get in touch with Monica Beamer and RSVP. The email address is monica@kboo.org. Thank you for being an active member of KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste, as you can hear her in the background. Today is Monday, May 11th, 2015. You're listening 104.3 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, and 90.7 in Portland, and via the World Wide Web.
KBOO.fm.
Our guest this morning is Margaret Regan. She is the author of Detained and Deported: Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire, a fascinating volume which tells the story of individuals and families and the challenges they face as they seek to live a new life here in the United States.
To stay in the United States and live a life.
And so, good morning, Margaret. How are you?
Good morning, Cecil. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. And thank you so much for this book. And as you know, we're going to interrupt our conversation by urging people to support our community radio station. But I thought we might begin by you just telling us a little bit about how you became interested in the stories of immigrants and their families.
Yeah, well, I live here in southern Arizona, just 60 miles from the border in Tucson. And I was a reporter full-time back in the day. About 15 years ago, I was working for the Tucson Weekly as an investigative reporter. And that's when we first started noticing the large numbers of migrant deaths in the desert. You may know that, you know, in the last 15 years, we've had almost 3,000 bodies found here in southern Arizona. So 5 years ago, I published a book about these migrant deaths. But of course, during this great migration north of immigrants, many people get through, and I began to be interested in the idea, well, what happens to the people, those who do not die in the desert, who successfully make the journey into the United States? What happens to them after they've established lives in the United States? They've had kids, very enmeshed in their communities, and they suddenly get stopped. Maybe they get sent to the detention centers, or maybe they get deported and separated, especially from their children. So that's what this new book is about. People have been here for a long time, and suddenly everything changes.
And you mentioned you've been researching and writing about this for a long time. And, you know, the first book you wrote was The Death of Jocelyn. It was a very touching, moving story, and something that's foreign to many people who are here in the United States, the whole journey in and of itself, and the challenges that people face struggling to find a new home. In your discussions with immigrants and those involved, why did you want to focus on the lives of individual stories as opposed to
maybe doing data or statistics or other fashions of sharing information?
Right. Yeah. Well, the book has a little of both. You know, we journalists are. You tell the stories of people, and then you kind of make everybody do the homework by bringing in those statistics. But I don't know, you know, in the whole discussion of immigration in the United States, which has grown very bitter, I would say, we forget that these are actual human beings with actual lives. And so I think my job as a journalist is to let people know, well, what happens to the people kind of at the bottom who are affected by our increasingly harsh immigration laws? What happens to a person's life? You know, there's a mother in my book who's getting ready for work one day. She's a single mom of two kids. ICE, you know, Immigration Customs Enforcement, shows up at her door early in the morning, takes her into custody, takes the two children and brings them to Child Protective Services, puts the two kids in foster care, and within a day, she's deported over across the border into Mexico. So in the space of a few hours, her whole life changes. She loses her home, her job, and most importantly, her children. So I think, you know, putting a name and a face on these people who are subjected to these laws makes us understand, you know, what's really kind of being done in our name under the law.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. We welcome your phone calls to speak with our guest, Margaret Reagan, who is the author of Detained and Deported: Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire. The phone number is 503-231-8187. But we also want to let you know that we're in the middle of our membership drive. And today here for More Talk Radio, they have tasked us with encouraging people to raise $600 for this hour. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but think of it this way. If 10 people are willing and able to give $5 a month, then we have met our goal, and you can feel satisfied that you are doing your part in terms of radio activism.
And if you would like to not only support this station, we can offer you, through the generosity of Margaret's publisher, a copy of this very wonderful book, Detained and Deported, by giving us a call here at 877-500-5266. And those of you who don't like talking to people, you can just go on to your computer, go to kboo.fm, and you can become a member that way.
Yes, it's quick and easy. And we have a cohort here in conversation to join us in encouraging you to become a member or renew your membership.
Cohorts conspire to people to encourage them to contribute to Cable. I don't know what I'm saying, Celeste and, and Cecil, but
it's what we call Monday Mouth.
That's all right. It's Brian. I'm down. I'm really, really pleased to be here with Celeste and Cecil and their guest, Margaret, to ask you to contribute to KABU. 877-500-5266 online at KBOO.FM. This sounds like a fascinating book. You know, friends, the plight of immigrants is just so much, as Margaret mentioned, has been so polarized in the news. And to be able to read a unique account of the plight of these poor people, and poor, I'm using in quotes, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But it's something that is really, really a crucial thing. And, you know, let's look at it this way. Immigrants, you know, have been coming to this country for hundreds of years, if not, you know, longer. And it's such a pleasure to have Margaret with us this morning on the air and to be able to contribute by donating books. $60 minimum pledge. Friends, that is pennies a day, $5 a month. You can get a copy of this book. Call us right now, 877-500-5266.
And tell people about the electronic funds transfer. I think that's a big option, an important option, an easy option when you want to support KABU.
That's right, Celeste. Yeah, it's really easy to set up, but we can do that a couple of different ways. If you have a checking account, we can set it up that way very easily, or even a credit card or debit card, we can do that now. So a small amount each month will be deducted from your account, whether it be $5 a month, $7.50, $10 a month, $20 a month, whatever you'd like. And in that way, that sustains the funding of KABU evenly throughout the year. And for you as a contributing listener now, member of KABU, it's a small amount that comes out every month. So it's not a huge big chunk out of your budget in one big large chunk. It just comes out little tiny bits every month. And you see that in your statements. It says KABU Foundation. And you know that part of your hard-earned cash is going to support this radio station and to support programs like More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste every Monday morning.
And Brian, we appreciate you and the hundreds of volunteers who are part of this radio station. And this is really a volunteer oriented and volunteer directed community radio station, is it not?
Oh, it is. It is, Cecil. Yeah, that's the thing. KABU runs on 500 plus volunteers, much as the three of the voices you're hearing right now, and our guest who is contributing her time and energy to this program this morning. And that's what makes KABU different than a commercial radio station, among other things, is that we have volunteers. So my interest in being here is strictly, it's not driven by anything other than supporting the community.
Well, thank you. And so we want to remind you, give us a call here at 877-500-5266 and become a supporting member of your community radio station.
Yes, and if you are willing and able to make a $60 pledge, we have for you the book, Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire by our guest, Margaret Reagan. It's important to have a book like this because it shares the actual stories of people who have experienced deportation and the breakup of families, and it puts a human face to the statistics. It puts a human face to the stories, the newscasts, and the sound bites that we're often assailed with. This way you have something that's more of a personal narrative, and you're able to understand why people are passionate about helping our newcomers, the immigrants who have come here, to stay in the country that they value and love, and help them settle down and have a meaningful life.
Margaret, this weekend, here in Oregon, a number of us went up to a detention center in Washington State. It's sort of like an annual Mother's Day pilgrimage where we bear witness to the challenges that those who are in detention centers face in the separation of families. What I think you do very well in your book is describe the environment of the detention centers. Tell us, what are detention centers, and share a little bit about that environment.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, the Mother's Day pilgrimage up to the detention center near you. The United States uses about 250 different detention centers around the country. They're specifically not supposed to be jails. These are places that are holding people simply to ensure that they show up at hearings before the judge. I was told over and over again by the people who run these centers that they're not prisons. This is a whole different thing. You're just being held here. I mean, you're deprived of your liberty, but they're not supposed to be punitive. But that's very far from the case in the detention centers I visited. Interestingly, the United States only owns a small number of these places. You know, ICE runs something like 13 detention centers in all of the United States. Most of them are run by these private for-profit prison corporations, including the Corrections Corporation of America and GEO. And what those companies really specialize in is criminal prisons, and they've, you know, branched out into these detention centers. There's a really big one in Arizona that I visited a number of times in researching my book. It's called Eloy. You would not be able to distinguish this from a prison when you see how people are treated there. I went on a family visiting day. The guards were extremely harsh with the families, including the very small children who were there to visit their mothers and fathers. There was yelling at the families waiting. They made them wait for long periods of time without, you know, learning what the delay was for. The visits were quite short. This Eloy Detention Center only allows families to come in on Saturday and Sunday, only allows them to stay for 1 to 2 hours. Some people have to travel long distances to get there. And for the detainees themselves, they're housed in small cells that are identical to prison, you know, with a toilet in the middle of the room, just like we see on television. And the detention centers, since they're not meant to be prisons, and in theory they're not meant to be holding people long term, they offer very few activities or programs. You know, at least in our state prisons, when people are there for a long time, they do offer options sometimes for classes and various other activities. They really don't offer anything at these places, and so these people confined behind bars, you know, 24/7, they're beset with worry about their families and nothing really going on to distract them from it.
So, again, what you're describing sounds like a punitive situation, a punitive environment. How do they justify these particular conditions? Why is this environment considered the best solution for detainees?
Well, I don't know if anybody considers it the best.
In terms of the fact that they want to use them and they have this contract to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, with the ramp up in our immigration laws, this goes all the way back to the 1990s, a very punitive law in 1996. Really cracked down on immigrants and, you know, increased the numbers of people rapidly who were being detained. And, you know, when you have lots of people that suddenly you want to hold in a place that you need the help of these private partners, basically, to accommodate them. There is a prison in Arizona, a detention center in Arizona run by the U.S. government. ICE runs it. And the conditions there are far better than in the private prisons. The visitors are allowed to come 7 days a week. The people are allowed to go outside. They have computers. They play basketball. The prisoners told me that the food is really pretty great.
But they're still referred to as prisoners.
Yeah. What did I refer to? I'm sorry. The detainees. Well, you know, it's really hard to distinguish.
Yeah.
But so, since we've really ramped up, you know, the government doesn't have the wherewithal to build these nicer places. Every few years, you know, the government will say, well, we're gonna improve the situation in these detention centers. It hardly ever happens. I noticed of interest, new presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, in her speech last week about immigration, she specifically mentioned the conditions in the detention center and said, we have to do something about it. And I thought that was kind of amazing because that's not usually part of the political discourse, how we treat these people.
But why is this condition so markedly different between the government, the ICE-run one, and the privately owned and run one? Is it because there's a lack of oversight or political will or
profit.
Profit.
Well, I think you've really hit the nail on the head, Celeste. I think it's all of those things. In theory, ICE monitors these detention centers, and they have some of their own people in them. And I got a tour of Eloy Detention Center by a man who works with ICE, and it was interesting because he praised everything about it. He said, you know, our food is delicious. I have a guy here who eats this food once a week, and he's very critical, and we really rely on his judgments, and we have lots of nice things for the women to do. By the way, this is the only one in Arizona that holds women. And afterwards, it was an interesting juxtaposition because I had two interviews lined up with women who were there, and everything that this government official had told me that this private prison was doing well, these women who were actually detained there contradicted. One woman, very religious woman, and she says to me, God forgive me, but I cannot eat this food. The food is inedible. You know, they're held in these small places. They said the guards are extremely harsh. They yell at them. They threaten them with solitary for, you know, insubordination. You know, the kinds of things that would be happening, you would think, in a prison for, you know, hardened criminals. So why, you know, these private prisons are, they're a booming industry, They're making really good money. It goes hand in hand with our increasing incarceration of American citizens for crimes. As you know, we have one of the highest incarceration rates in the world, and a lot of those places are run by these private prisons, too.
Yes.
They have a lot of political friends. It's just the easiest thing for the government to say, oh, give them the contract. They'll take care of it.
You're listening to KBOO, and our guest this morning is Margaret Regan, author of Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire. And we want to urge you to give us a call at 877-500-5266. And for a pledge of $60, you may become the recipient of this fascinating volume. Brian, how are things?
Well, things are going along here. We have people waiting to hear from our listeners who want to become members at 877-500-5266. You can get a copy of Margaret Regan's book. Sounds very, very fascinating. For a $60 minimum pledge or more, that's $5 a month. Very, very easy to do. If you're listening online, kboo.fm is the way to contribute. There's a donate today jar in the upper right-hand corner. You can go to there and pick your amount and donate that way. You know, yesterday was Mother's Day, you guys, and I know it's a little bit off subject, but perhaps you'd like to give a gift membership for your mother, or next month is Father's Day. Make your one of your parents a honorary member of KBOO, and you can do that by calling 877-500-5266. You know, you guys, the plight of immigrants in this country is such an important topic. It is such a, it's a difficult subject to be able to discuss level-headed with other people. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yes.
And having this book that Margaret has written, I think would be a valuable tool to help educate not only ourselves, but perhaps a loved one as a gift for them, perhaps. And I don't know. It just sounds fascinating. I really want to check this book out. But if you'd like to get your own copy, you can do that by dialing 877-500-5266, and for just $5 a month or more, you can get a copy of Margaret Regan's book. So that's what I would suggest people do.
And you know, every week people come up to me, Celeste, who say, oh, I listen to your program.
Yes.
Really love it. And I'm always fascinated that people either recognize my voice or know something about KBOO. And some of them are KBOO members.
Yes, some of them are.
But some of them are not.
Yes, they're avid listeners, but they haven't committed yet to becoming a member. And becoming a member is really easy, and it is gratifying. And in terms of supporting something, it is relatively painless. What do I mean by painless? Well, for $5 a month, which is about the price of your beverage of choice. You know, if you give up a beverage of choice one day a month or maybe every other week, you know, there it is. You've got the price of KBOO, and you're supporting award-winning programming. If you want to spend $60, you can get the book. The book is really important. Say you live in a very politically charged family, or you have a politically charged environment in which you're active, and you want to be able to give substantial evidence why we really need to change our immigration policy. But you feel a little bit amiss. You know, you don't really know anybody who has immigrated to the country, but you feel in your heart, since your last name might be O'Shaughnessy, or it might be Francois, or it might be Granada, or it might be Hirazaku. You know, you think, yes, we need to do something about the immigration policy, but I don't know anything. This book is a great opportunity to learn more, to bolster your arguments, to teach your kids, to show students in your classrooms, to share with your reading circle, to share with your legislator and electeds, to just educate yourself.
So give us a call at 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm and join us in this very important community building enterprise known as your community radio station, KBOO. Brian, we're going to let you just remind people how they might pledge, how they might donate, and then we'll continue our conversation with Margaret.
Thanks, Cecil. So, yes, calling 877-500-5266 or going online at kboo.fm. The amount is up to you, friends, but we are hoping that you're going to do that right now and become a not just a passive listener, but an active member of this valuable community resource that we call KBOO. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. And we're trying to raise $600, so if we can get 10 people, that means we have met our goal, and everyone who contributes can feel very good about supporting a winning cause. We also want to encourage people, especially folks who are interested in finding out more about the plight of immigrant families and maybe something they might be able to do to help, call into the show and speak to our guests. How can you do that? 503-231-8187.
Margaret, as we continue our conversation, I wanted you to share a little bit about something that is somewhat seems strange to us, and that is the wall and that physical separation between the United States and Mexico, and share some stories about, you know, what happens when people come to the wall on one side or the other.
Yeah, well, ever since the wall has gone into place, we've had many more deaths and many more injuries of migrants. Because, you know, back in the day, I have a friend who grew up in Nogales, Arizona, right across the border. In those days, you know, people used to just cross over. There were families, you know, maybe the grandma was on the Mexican side, the other family was on this side. People went back and forth easily. There was not that focus on keeping people out, you know, a generation ago. With these large walls, we have made these town and urban crossings more dangerous, and so migrants travel very far to get around the walls, and that means once they cross over, they're in remote parts of our Arizona desert, and, you know, it is already heating up here in May. That's when we begin to experience large numbers of deaths. People are traveling far. It's hot. They get around the wall, cross it in a remote place, and then they start dying in large numbers every summer. So that's one, you know, catastrophic effect of the wall. Another thing that's quite interesting, if you have a copy of my book there's a mm-hmm. very interesting photograph on the cover of the book.
Yes.
Yes.
A couple years ago, interestingly, we used to have a wall that you couldn't see through. It was made of old helicopter landing pads left over from the Persian Gulf War, military surplus. There were these kind of big, ugly metal things nailed together. Well, the Border Patrol didn't like them because they couldn't see who was on the other side. And also, sometimes the coyotes, the smugglers, would use a blowtorch to make a hole in these things. So
yes.
very unsatisfactory from the point of view of the government. So they put up these new walls with these, you know, very, very highly fortified walls, but they have poles with spaces in between so that the Border Patrol could see possibly migrants plotting to get over. Well, it also meant that families on one side could see their loved one on the other side. And if you go down to the border wall, sort of away from the gate where all the hubbub is of people crossing through the, you know, the legal pathways, you find these families, you know, very touching, holding hands through the wall. I have a story of a little boy that I saw, you know, handing his school paper to his dad on the other side. You see mothers with children come to the wall on both sides to communicate with the family member on the other side. It's heartbreaking to see it, the separation of these families, but it is kind of a nice thing that they can see each other. Those who live, you know, in the nearby border towns and those who live in Arizona who can see their families that way.
And there's also been religious services, celebration of the Mass and sharing the sacrament through the borders.
Last year we had an amazing event where 8 leading bishops, Catholic bishops from around the United States, came down to the border wall and they said a Mass in Nogales, Arizona, on our side of the border. They set up a platform. These 8 bishops were up there speaking about the catastrophic human impact of immigration. And on the American side, there were several thousand people standing there listening to the Mass. And as well, on the south side of the wall, there were these migrants standing there also listening to the bishops. And at communion time, one of the bishops took the host and walked over to the wall and extended the host through the wall to the communicants on the other side. I thought it was a beautiful gesture of, our common humanity.
Yes. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're speaking with Margaret Regan, and we'll go to our caller.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Look, I got a question. I don't believe that migrant workers or people should be able to come to America. America didn't get this way without struggle. I mean, Americans had revolution, all the things that we had to do to make America what it is. I mean, it didn't come easy. Now, why should migrant workers come over here and jump on the bandwagon? Why don't they stay in their country and go through the different types of struggles that we had to go through to make their country better, instead of just running tail and coming over here and jumping on the bandwagon? So for that reason, I'm against immigration.
Okay. Stay on the line, though. Margaret?
Okay. Yeah, well, I don't think we can deny that this whole nation was formed by immigrants. I mean, the struggles that you speak of, and they're very true that, you know, the nation has struggled through many things. We're a country of immigrants. I gave one talk, and a Native American man in the audience stood up and said, well, I've been here for 18,000 years. How about the rest of you? I mean, the rest of us, truth be told, are from other parts of the world. Human migration is just part of human history. I mean, you know, people began in Africa, anthropologists tell us, and ultimately spread around the world. And I tell a story in my first book about my own Irish immigrant family in the 19th century, and so many Irish came here in the wake of the famine, and they were coming here in desperation in order to feed their families. And when they got here, they were not treated very well. And that's true of most waves of the immigrants who come here. You know, first we revile them because we think they're different, they're taking something away from us. Eventually they become, part of the country, and we celebrate, you know, our melting pot all the time. I feel like each time we have a new wave of immigrants, and this time, you know, the big wave is, well, from Asia as well as from Latin America, we get upset that they're coming, and then later, you know, they become part of our American fabric. And I don't think it's an easy thing by any means for these migrants to come over. I think they suffer terribly. They're paid low wages, often illegally low wages, because they have no power, no recourse to complain if they're in. You know, the stuff they do for us, I've met many migrant workers from the Northwest who've been deported down to Mexico. picking that fruit up there. You know, they do a lot of jobs for us that are really important, and we don't treat them very well.
Two other things that I would like to add, Michael, because I know you're a well-read person. One is, in many cases, you will find that manufacturers or our farm owners will entice them up here for work so that they can pay them a lower wage and be able to make a higher profit. And then also think about some of the protectionist policies this country has. They may damage other countries' economies and make this the only place where a family can survive. So it's no different than whether you are coming here as a Chinese worker back in the 1800s to work on the railroads, or you are an Irish worker coming here because of the famine, as Margaret mentioned, or you are coming from India, say you're coming from Mumbai, you've got a degree and you want to work as an engineer, and somebody's telling you come over here and work. You come where you can get a job.
Well, you know, I understand that, but most of the people that come from overseas, it's expensive, and most of those people have education. But when all you have to do is walk across the street to get into another country, then what you have is disease and an uneducated individual. Those are two different kinds of people. I think that people, especially in Mexico, should stay in Mexico and try to change things and do what Americans did to change that situation. Just by running away from that and coming over where other people have already laid the foundation, I can't buy that.
Okay, Michael, we're going to go to our next caller, and thank you for your call. And we have another caller. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. Say, I'd like to address something that Michael said. You know, if you make your borders porous to reach out and grab the wealth or interfere in other countries, you make your borders porous for the people there to come back in. And there's the idea that, you know, well, these people need to solve their own problems. Well, for instance, we stirred up a lot of these problems.
Yes, we don't acknowledge it. Yes,
for instance, maybe this is discussed, but for instance, I think it was ADM wanted to dump all the surplus corn, GMO corn in Mexico on the market. Mexico resisted and refused, and the company used the State Department to sue Mexico before the World Trade Organization to force them to take this stuff. Well, what that did was it completely depressed the market. It was just dumping this corn on the market. It bankrupted and drove, when I read the statistic, was 1.2 million farmers. I think the statistic now is 2 million have been bankrupted and driven off their lands. Well, after they were driven off their lands, then the price of the corn for tortillas caused the price of tortillas to double in Mexico City. So the point is you're bankrupting. When you're talking about over a million people losing their farms, you're not talking about a million people who can no longer support themselves or are thrown out of work. You're talking about their families, too, which may be quite large, our farm families down there. And there's no accountability for these things that we do around the world. There's reasons that some countries don't have immigrant problems, not necessarily because they're so closed. It's that they're not interfering with countries around the world. We don't have floods of Maghrebis coming to us like France, but France was involved with the Maghreb, you know, Algeria and Tunisia and Morocco, for generations and screwed that up. And then those people are going to France.
Yes.
Britain has people coming from their empire, their former empire, where they screwed it up. And so a lot of the people who are going to Britain don't come to the United States. It's when we're messing around with these countries and ruining their countries that they start coming here. We don't take any acknowledgement or accountability for these things.
Now go ahead, finish your point, Steve.
Oh, that's it.
Okay.
It's beginning to break up, but anyway, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Margaret, certainly, as we've heard from our last two callers, immigration remains a very controversial subject. One thing I think you do in the book is not only talk about the technical, but the human stories as well. And share something before we take another break. Share something about the impact of immigration on, say, Border Patrol folks.
And children. Compare and contrast.
Yeah, well, the Border Patrol has, you know, it's really interesting when people talk about how easy it is to cross the border. It's not easy to cross. It's not easy to cross at all.
if it was, yeah, people wouldn't be dying, as you mentioned.
Exactly. The Border Patrol has increased in size by about 5 times since the early 90s. You know, we used to have a Border Patrol of something like 4,000 for the whole country. Now we're up to more than 5 times that amount, and like something like 23,000 Border Patrol agents. So that's one impact. In a way, it becomes a self-perpetuating economic system because, you know, those guys have good jobs. They, I went to a Border Patrol recruitment meeting one time, and the speaker was saying to the candidates, listen, this is an industry that is never going to downsize, you know.
That's so
border
sad.
Security, border security is great. He said, you know, forget about attending your children's birthday or Thanksgiving dinner with your family. You're going to work all the time, but you can make $90,000 a year with overtime in a very short time. So this is kind of a self-generating, you know, economic employment program in a way. As far as the children, I think what's really interesting is, and that the last caller made a very important point about economic policy in the United States that has forced and encouraged people to come up here. With NAFTA, we started bringing U.S. subsidized corn from Iowa down to Mexico, and as he said, we put more than 1 million, some estimates are 2 million small farmers out of work. Very marginal small farms, poor people selling their corn. They can no longer compete with the U.S. corn. That happened in 1994, NAFTA, and we saw a huge, huge increase in immigration after that. And so that's quite a long time ago when you think about that. We're already 20 years in.
Yes.
Many of these people have children who are U.S. citizens. And let's look at the complexity of that. Does a U.S. citizen child, an American child, have the right to be raised by his or her own mother and father? We're separating these parents from their children who are Americans, just like you and me, sending their parents either to detention centers or, more permanently, across the border as deportees. That's a very complicated and very, you know, sort of heartrending issue. What happens to those kids?
And I think that in itself makes the usual political divide much more complicated, because when you're talking about families, people understand that. And I think what you do well in your book is humanize these stories by talking about families and the impact, real impact on families that our policies have. And I want to, you know, let people know that they can get a volume of this book. And I would encourage you to also support KBOO at the same time by offering a pledge of $60. That's $5 a month. And you can receive a copy of Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire by our guest this morning, Margaret Reagan. And that number is, Celeste?
It's 877-500-5266. We're looking to raise $600 here for KBOO on More Talk Radio. And so we really need you to call in and become the supporter that you can be. Now, we know that we have lots of avid listeners, as Cecil has said before. I ran into people myself this past week that said, oh, yes, I caught your show. I really enjoyed it. But if you're not supporting it,
we like your love, but we also want your money.
If you're not supporting it, there's something missing from the equation. You know, you are missing from the equation. This is your special invitation to become a radio activist. Now, you've heard us say that many times. What's a radio activist? Well, many people give money to support a cause that if they had more time, they would donate more of their time to. But say you don't have the time, but you're passionate about something, so you donate money and we act as your proxy. One of the things KABU does to act as your activist proxy is make sure that the real story gets out, that you hear more sides of the story, that you dig deeper into the story. We don't just have programming on for your entertainment, which, by the way, is important, but we have programming on here for your education, for your edification, and for your information.
I like that. Give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm. And people like Brian are waiting for your call. Brian, are you still there?
I am still here, Cecil and Celeste and your guest, Margaret. Yep, we are waiting to hear from you out there. Call us right now. If you're listening to me right now and you're not yet a member of KABU, make that change. Flip that switch from passive listener to active member. How do you do it? Really easily. Super, super easy. 877-500-5266. If you're online or near a computer, you can go to kboo.fm and click on the Donate Today jar on the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. It takes you to a secure form. You can fill it out. Send in your money, however you want to do it. If you're on your way to work right now and you're in Portland, stop by the studio right now at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, right off of Ankeny and Burnside on 8th, and come and see what your money is supporting. You can see the faces for radio that make it happen. People like myself, Cecil, Celeste, Steve in the air room, all the people down here making radio happen 24 hours a day. We're all just waiting to greet you with a warm embrace, a little bit of coffee, maybe a little coffee cake look. I don't know. We'll see. 877-500-5266. Let's make this the day that you become an active member of KABU, not just a listener.
That's right. Add passion to your listening. Add passion by adding your money, putting your dollar bills where your heart is.
Exactly. Well, we look forward to your calls here at 877-500-5266 as we continue our conversation with Margaret Regan, author of Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire. And I believe we have a caller waiting to speak.
Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having this show.
Thank you for listening.
Yes. Yeah. So what's on your mind?
Well, I would like to first acknowledge that I am a great-great-great-granddaughter of what I would actually consider illegal and unjust immigration if we're going to go back to the roots of the quote-unquote founding of this colonial situation that we're in. I am a descendant of the man who chartered the Mayflower. And the acts that were done and continue to be done to indigenous families, including across the quote-unquote border, are just ludicrous and really need to be taken into account when we talk about quote-unquote modern immigration reform. The reality is that so many of the families who are divided by unfair borders that have been imposed through colonization are actually also native to this land and have also been here for 18,000 years, as you shared. One of the men stood up and said that as a Native American, he has been here for more than 18,000 years. And I feel like in order to balance out the conversation of today with some of the untold at times and certainly unjust actions of the past, there need to be voices like mine that come up and say, as a descendant of pilgrims who have done wrong, this is unfair. And I feel like it should be addressed with history and injustice in mind as well.
Well, thank you for your call, Margaret.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting point. You know, I was giving a talk recently, and somebody stood up and said something quite similar. I mean, when we talk about how we celebrate the immigration history of the United States, we cannot forget that this land was not necessarily available when the immigrants started coming, when the people started coming in from Europe. And also of interest, many of the immigrants coming across the border are indigenous people.
Yes.
Of Mexico, yeah. And
which means
America.
Native American, you know, in plain English.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah,
exactly.
It's so interesting. You know, the whole last summer we heard so much about the immigrant children and their mothers coming over the border. And by the way, there were many more what we call family groups of mothers and children coming than the children by themselves. Mm-hmm. And I met a lot of them here in Tucson because they were coming through here. Many of those people are the native peoples of those countries, and they are the poorest and really the most oppressed and endangered. And it's very interesting that many of them do not have Spanish as their first language.
Yes.
You know, these various, Guatemala has something like 29 different Indian languages. That Mexican consul in Tucson told me one time, he's got something like 30 interpreters on call, because they get these people from these remote and desperately poor parts of Mexico who really don't even speak Spanish. So it's very important, yeah, to realize that these native peoples are coming here, and as you say, their families have been here for many, many thousands of years in the Americas.
Thank you for your call, Sarah. You know, one of the things also I think is really important for us to remember is some of these people might have been displaced as we pushed out. And so originally they were in what we would call the United States and were pushed out and pushed over or pushed back into Mexico. Because we forget, as you mentioned earlier, the fact that people do migrate back and forth as part of a growing season, or as part of a harvest season, or as part of a herding season, whatever it is, people have a tendency to move where nature and opportunity take them.
Yeah, absolutely. And an interesting byproduct of our very much increased border enforcement is that we don't have that easy back and forth of families. You know, a generation ago, you had a lot of Mexican men coming up here, especially to the Southwest, and I'm sure to the Northwest as well, in the agriculture and the fruit production up there. They would come for the season. They would come and work, and then they'd go back home for 6 months. And they could support their families in that way and still be an essential part of their family. When we increase border security, we put a stop to that. And as a result, we have more migrants who come here on a permanent basis. That's why we started having more women and children on the migrant trail, because the dad who used to come home all the time can't get back and forth. So then you have women and children coming up to join, you know, their father and husband in Portland or in Tucson and elsewhere. So, you know, that's a really significant thing that has happened. And a lot of the deportees down there stuck in Nogales, Mexico now, who I visited, they're people who have lived here for a long time, and an elderly parent has died or an elderly parent has fallen ill. They've gone home, as any of us would do, to care for our elderly parent. And now they can't get back in to their children in the United States. And they'll say, it wasn't like this when I came the last time. I didn't know I wouldn't be able to get back to my kids in the Bronx or in Miami. So you have these very complicated family situations that, you know, just keep getting more and more twisted, really, as time goes on.
Margaret, what can we as average people do to make a difference? I think it's really important that we know that these things happen to families, but what can we do to assist them or to really encourage our electeds to have the political will to make a difference?
Yeah, well, I'm assuming I can't make this prediction entirely that immigration is going to be a big part of the presidential campaign to come. I thought it was interesting, as I mentioned, that candidate Hillary Clinton addressed the issue of immigration last week and, you know, her views on how we need to do something about the fact that so many people are here basically embedded in this country for so long. So, and I applaud you for, you know, putting on a radio program about it too and bringing the word out that this is something that we need to discuss. In terms of, you know, what you can do on an individual basis, I love the idea that Cecil mentioned people actually going to the detention centers. These are forgotten people for the most part. Most of these detention centers are in remote rural places. I think it's by design so that these people don't come to the consciousness of Americans. And there are many groups that go and visit these people. There's a group in Tucson. They actually just send letters to the women in the Eloy Detention Center here. it means a lot because, you know, some of these people, especially those applying for asylum, they can be held in the detention centers for years. I met one man who was held for 7 years in detention, and you can imagine the despair that that descends on a person who's held for that long. So there are small sort of charitable things you can do and larger political things you can do by voting for people who have some way to end the problem.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Margaret, and we thank you for your book, Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire. I want to encourage, thank you for your work. It's important work, and we appreciate you sharing some time with us this morning.
Yes, indeed. And continue your work and get the word out.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And I'd encourage your listeners to join in and support KBOO.
Excellent.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
And that number, you heard it from Margaret Regan.
That's right.
So give us a call at 877-500-5266 for a pledge of merely $60. That's $5 a month. That's $1.25 a week. You may get a copy of this book, Detained and Deported.
That's right. And $5 a month is not a lot. You can do it by electronic funds transfer. And oh, did we forget to mention? Here's something that's really important about being a KBOO member. Not only is it tax deductible, but when you become a KBOO member, do you know that you join forces with our KBOO business member community? That means you can get discounts when you are a card-carrying KBOO member by showing your card to businesses that work with us and offer discounts. That means that your gift keeps giving.
Brian, how are you this morning?
I'm just dandy. I'm just pleased as punch to be here to ask people to join KBOO. And, you know, members only, that's what we're all about. No, we're not all about members only, but we're encouraging you out there to become an active member of KBOO by dialing that magic phone number, 877-500-5266. What a great interview, you guys, with Margaret Regan. That is an amazing book, and you can get it your very own selves and share it with your friends with a $5 a month or $60 a year contribution to KBOO Radio. You too can have a copy of the book, Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire. What a wonderful opportunity to hear from the author of that book. And I was going to ask her before she got off the phone how it differs talking to a radio station like KBOO, where we have the freedom and open-endedness of an hour-long discussion as compared to her perhaps being on a commercial radio station. Because I bet you she would say, if she could, that it's much more freeing to be able to talk to a station and people such as Cecil and Celeste here on More Talk Radio on KBOO Radio, because they're not constrained by commercial breaks and other things like that. Freedom is what KBOO is all about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, our listeners who make that move to become supporters become free. How do you become free? Well, okay, I'm sure some of you might say, well, that's a stretch, Celeste, but think, hold on, stay with me. You listen to Fox News, what do you know? You know what they want you to know. You react the way they want you to react. Mm-hmm. You act like they want you to act because you can't think anything else. That's what you have in your brain to go on. But when you listen to other media outlets or watch television with, let's say, something like Democracy Now!, you become free to think what is really important, what is real. You have the freedom to have a more nuanced view of things. You have the freedom to make better choices for your life because you are better informed. And wouldn't you feel a lot better if not only are you better informed, but you're supporting the organization that keeps you better informed? I would be. Yep. That's where I put my money where my mouth is.
Well, I really appreciate the support we receive here at KBOO, and we enjoy what we're doing here. But we also realize that it costs money. And
yes.
So in order for us to get the books, to make these long-distance phone calls, to do the research, to keep the lights on, we need support from you. So give us a call. You might have been thinking, well, maybe someone else can do it. No, you can help us. So for $60, $120, whatever you can afford, we will accept. Give us a call at 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm to make this a reality for all of us.
And it's really inexpensive and it is satisfying. And you'll find yourself listening with glee when you have supported KBOO. What I mean by listening with glee? Well, you'll be tickled because you know that you are supporting not only truth and freedom, but your passion. If you enjoy listening to KBOO, or as I sometimes challenge those who love to hate KBOO, you must support it. That way, your passion stays alive, it stays viable. And KBOO is a viable winner. We've been around for over 40 years. With your help, we can be here 40 more years. We want to thank you all for listening, for calling, for supporting. Don't forget, you can still get the book if they're not already gone. 877-500-5266. Now, stay tuned to your community connection for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Katie O'Brien's, located at 2809 Northeast Sandy, a neighborhood sports bar serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Lunch was provided by Dot's Cafe, located at 2521 Southeast Clinton Street, serving food and drinks to the Southeast Clinton neighborhood since 1991, including vegan and gluten-free options as well as brunch. Dinner was provided by Dove Vivi, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason, serving cornmeal crust pizza for dine-in and takeout.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Storefront Review, produced by the Triangle Theater from May 7th through the 30th at the